have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
This is Multipolarity, charting the rise of the new multipolar world order.
Coming up this week...
Does the housing market obey the laws of supply and demand? We say no. Join us for a controversial, possibly mind-blowing journey into the heart of darkness, into an upside-down world that set Twitter on fire this week.
Victoria Nuland has fallen on her sword, or someone else's sword. Whatever happened to America's third-ranking diplomat suddenly retiring at 62 while her president hobbles on at 80? It does seem there are suddenly a lot of swords about. Does the fall of notoriously Russia-averse Nuland clear the way for a Biden 180 on Ukraine?
Finally, when Rishi Sunak put the crested podium out front of Downing Street last Friday for an emergency announcement, it felt more like a hostage situation, like the British political class begging for its life. The Gaza War has ripped up the story Britain told itself about its multiculture. But still, no one can quite say it. How will the country survive its political class being rendered altogether speechless?
But first...
House of Mirrors.
One of the things that we also cover from time to time are major domestic issues that are affecting the Western world as a whole, rather than individual countries. Because those issues are endemic of the shift from a unipolar to a multipolar world order. Because not only are they helping to drive that shift, but they're also being caused by the shift itself. There's a two-way stream there. And one of those major issues, one of the major signs that the existing world order is breaking down is the ongoing housing crisis. This is something that's particularly strongly felt in Britain. But I think it's fair to say across the Western world, especially in the major cities, places like New York, London, Paris, it's really becoming an increasing issue. Now, this week, our co-host and resident macroeconomist, Philip Pilkington, has been having a running battle against people because he has a slightly differing view to the mainstream consensus. That won't come as a shock to most people, but he does have a very different view to the mainstream consensus about the causes of the housing crisis. I think most of us tend to view it either as a supply issue or demand issue. Either not enough houses are being built, or there is too much demand for the houses, perhaps caused by increased migration, or some people might even bring in factors like divorce and the fact that there are more single parent households required now. The consensus view is there simply aren't enough houses to satisfy demand from people. And that's why prices have been pushed up. It's a classic supply-demand issue. But Philip has a different view. And this week, that has caused quite a bit of outrage on Twitter, especially amongst a group of people called YIMBYs, which YIMBY stands for Yes in My Backyard, as opposed to the famous NIMBYs, which is Not in My Backyard. The NIMBYs are very happy for things to happen as long as it doesn't happen next to them. They're very happy for new houses to be built as long as it doesn't obstruct their view of the fields out of the back window or something like that. They're the NIMBYs, not in my backyard. The YIMBYs are Yes in My Backyard. They believe in building everywhere. They're very much in favor of completely slackening planning controls and basically letting rip on the housing market, deregulating it completely. And by doing that, creating a housing boom, creating not a housing boom in terms of price, but a housing boom in terms of building. And through that, solve the housing problem by addressing the supply side of the housing problem. As I say, though, Philip's got a very different view. He believes that house price rises have been caused by something completely different, and that building more houses really won't have much of an effect, and the YIMBYs have it completely wrong. Philip, why, in your view, have house prices become so unaffordable? Why have we seen this big increase in house prices? Because I kind of understand your view, but I think you're going to have to explain it to me a bit better until I quite grasp it, because it seems quite counterintuitive to me.
Well, I think we should start with what is not causing it. And what is not causing it is exactly what you just said. The consensus view is that there's not enough houses. There's an undersupply of houses relative to the demand for houses. This seems to me, I don't want to be rude about it, but this seems to me a completely misunderstanding of how supply and demand work at a very basic level. If there is a shortage of something, yes, the price will go up, but some people won't get the product. If there's 5 apples and 10 people, and we can't divide the apples, let's say for the sake of argument, the price of the apples will rise, but only 5 people will get the apples. 5 people won't get the apples. Supply and demand is not magic. It doesn't make things pop into existence. It can have dynamic effects on production. Yes, we can talk about that. But it doesn't make things pop into existence out of nowhere. It's not magic. So if there was an actual problem with supply in Britain, for example, or in America or in any European country, some people would not have houses. They would be homeless. Now, there are homeless people and there is a rising homeless problem in many countries. But I think most sensible people know that homelessness is not the caused by a lack of accommodation. It's caused by other issues, mental illness, drug addiction, the closing of psychiatric hospitals, big cause nobody talks about. No one really attributes the rise in homelessness to a shortage, to a supply shortage of housing. And so I would repeat, there is no shortage of housing. Everybody has a roof over their heads, except the unfortunate people who are homeless, but they are homeless for a different reason. So that's the first observation. It's just a simple misunderstanding of supply and demand works. Well, the second issue with it.
Philip, can we just unpack that to begin with? Okay. So I think when people talk about a shortage of housing, I think what they mean is not a literal shortage of housing, like, you know, they understand, as you do, that everybody has a roof over their head. I think what they mean is a shortage of affordable housing, a situation where enough people want to rent property or buy property so that the price is just really high, right? Like, the, you know, it becomes a lot less affordable. In the past, house prices might have been 3 or 4 times annual earnings. Now they're, well, now in London at least, you know, you're looking at 10, 11 times annual earnings. And I think that's what they mean. It's not that there's a direct shortfall. It's just that there's not enough at an affordable price, right?
Well, I don't want to be smart about it, and I will get on. We can get on to what the actual drivers here are. I do not think that the current house prices are good for society or anything like that. But let's just start with the bare fact. There is a shortage of supply of Rolls Royces at affordable prices. So everybody wants a Rolls Royce, or at least most people wouldn't mind a Rolls Royce, but they're expensive. There's no shortage of Rolls Royces, though. So can we just clarify our terms here? There is no shortage. The issue is that Rolls Royces are expensive. Diamonds are expensive. Gold is expensive. And houses are expensive. That doesn't mean that there's a shortage of them. So when people say there's a shortage of houses because I can't afford to buy the house, that's not logically consistent. You also can't afford to buy, you know, 10 diamond rings without wiping out your savings. That doesn't mean there's a shortage of diamond rings. That's not the way the world works. That's not the way the economy works. And that's not what supply and demand means.
Okay, so if we've clarified our terms and, you know, perhaps people say there's a shortage of houses, but what they actually mean is there's a shortage of houses that people can afford. There's a shortage of houses that a first-time buyer on a reasonable wage, you know, an average wage or a bit more, could reasonably afford to pay the mortgage on, right? So, I mean, why do you think that is in that case?
Well, just to finish out the negative, I just add to that, there can, obviously, if there is more supply of something, it doesn't always, but it can fall in price. Again, doesn't always. See Rolex watches. And just to be very clear on this, there is not currently less houses per person than there was previously. So there was a big debate today on the day of recording on Twitter, which has been going on now for about a week. week and a half. Some of it's been very low tier, but I have got some good engagement. And what we found, it wasn't just me, a couple other people started pulling the charts because they got interested in the question. And what one guy has shown, Adam on Twitter, if you're watching, thanks for the help, because a lot of people were annoying me about this. What he showed is that since 1970, the number of houses per person in the country has risen 30%. And it's risen pretty consistently. There was a little bit of a lull after the 2008 crash, but it wasn't much. It's every year in Britain for the past 50 years, basically, the housing stock relative to the number of people that have been needing to be housed has been growing. And that is just a fact. That's just the ONS statistics. Why people aren't more broadly aware of this? The YIMBY movement and the building lobby. That's why. So what is actually causing this? Well, I did a thread on Twitter if people want to check it out. But the short answer is two things. And the two things are related. First of all, there is a changing demographic profile in the economy where there's a lot more old people relative to young people. So that's the first thing. And old people accumulate assets as they go on. Most people don't accumulate a large amount of financial assets or buying power, savings, call it what you will, until they get a bit older. I think it's usually you peak out at about 50 or so. I might be wrong on the exact number, but it's something like that. And when there's more old people relative to young people, there's more pools of assets. There's more pools of savings. And related to that, our economies have become increasingly financialized. Now, what do I mean by financialized? Well, complex term, but the main component of financialization that's relevant to the housing market is that people have got a lot more access to more exotic investment products. So if you were alive in Britain in the 1970s and you had some savings, you didn't actually have that many options. Most people would have held that savings in a standard savings account, which the bank would then invest in gilt, in UK treasuries. Now, the same would have been the case in the US. Some people would buy equities, stocks, but not many, actually. Most people did not understand the stock market. It scared them a little bit. They didn't really get it. So the stock market was kind of reserved for those in the know, as it were. Today, you can pretty much buy anything. I mean, most people will have their portfolio invested in equities and bonds. Many people speculate on other things. They buy foreign equities. They speculate even in currencies. You can do what you want now. You can just get an app on your phone and invest in everything. Now, what's happened is that everybody investing in everything, combined with low interest rates, broader discussion, we can't go into it now, but combined with low interest rates, which has to do with the economic structure of our late capitalist dysfunctional economies, means that people have these pools of assets and government bonds don't yield that much. Stocks tend to crash every few years and are a bit iffy. And especially when you buy a stock, you don't get the kind of dividend yield that you used to back in the day. And so what people do is they purchase housing. They purchase housing as an investment. And if you don't know this, I don't know where you live. You don't live in the same country that I live in. I am currently renting a house. I have rented most of my time in Britain. I don't own personally. Sorry to give so much personal information alone away. The past three of my landlords have been older baby boomer retirees. One of them was wealthy. The other two, not particularly wealthy. They've bought investment properties with their nest egg. And that's what people are doing. You buy a house and then you rent it out. And the rental is the yield on the asset that you have. So you're buying the house for two reasons. First of all, for the rental yield, very similar to dividend yield on an equity. And that rental yield is, depending on where you are, more or less stable. We can talk about that in a moment.
What is the second component? How will the discussion on the stability of the rental yield go? Is there a loophole by which the boomers can take that money with them to the afterlife? We've got a further 25 minutes this week, just on the YIMBY question. Then, we've got a discussion on the Newland resignation, and what the election of George Galloway portends for whatever's left of Britain. Everyone who's already in the Patreon club will find the full episode on an email link, and in your secret RSS feed, if you've installed that feature. For those who aren't, please consider donating to Philip's YIMBY Defence League Fund. It's $5, £5 or €5 a month to get all the paywalled episodes going forward, plus an increasingly large archive going backwards. You can cancel anytime. Just search Multipolarity on patreon.com. But now, back to the show.
crisis like the market capitalization of the housing market, same as in the equity market. Sorry, some people won't get that, some people will. It is a helpful analogy if you understand how equity markets work. But basically, yeah, I mean, there's no new money per se, because the same amount of houses are changing hands for